Will the chief clerk please call the roll?
Roll call, Monday, January 16th. Agar. Anderson.
Here.
Anselmi Dalton. Baldwin.
Here.
Barnard.
Excuse.
Boner.
Here.
Bouchard.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Excuse.
Dockstetter.
Here.
Driscoll.
Excuse.
Ellis.
Here.
Emmerich.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks.
Here.
Kinski.
Here, here.
Landon.
Excuse.
Excuse.
He's here.
Landon's present. Meyer. Moniz.
Here.
Nethercott.
Here.
Pappas.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Fladern.
Here.
Wasserberger.
Here.
President Liebout.
Here.
Anselmi Dalton here.
Barnard
here.
Coe
here. Driscoll present.
Any others?
Everybody. 28 present, 2 excused.
Prayer will be by the Reverend Mark Marston.
Please rise.
And our Lord, we give you great thanks for the energy, because our Lord, we know the task before these men and women is not an easy one, but our Lord, we know they do not walk this path alone, because you are with them. May your Holy Spirit truly bless them with patience and strength in your guidance. For these things we pray through Jesus Christ. Amen.
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 Please join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Play ball.
With that order of business, reading, correction, approval of the journal, will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January 13, 2017 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Bouchard, Chairman.
Any objections? Hearing none, the report is adopted. Today we have Dr. Joe McKinley. Is he with us here? We do have a doctor of the day, so he's somewhere out there. There will be no nurse today. Today in Wyoming history, in 1924, the first aircraft landed at Pinedale. I don't know what that really means. The first aircraft. Is that the first aircraft to land at Pinedale? Okay. Senator Landon, you may wish to have privilege of the floor.
May I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, Senator, you may.
I just wanted to point out that all good things come from Pinedale, and we still celebrate that incident to this day, the first landing of an airplane. It was a big deal, so just wanted to let you know that.
Senator Landon, you know what type of aircraft it was?
Did they have a runway?
You know, it might have been one of those that you wound up, you get at the local dime store, you know, and the kind that wind up go a lot further. So I think that's what it was.
A big rubber band. Senator Hicks, you wish prayer to the floor.
Yeah, Mr. President, just for clarification of the body, if there was any aliens that departed from that plane when it landed in, or that aircraft in Pinedale.
Okay. Moving right along. Pretty important day today, members of the Senate. In honor of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, I would like to recite one of his many memorable quotes. The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, to where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. Bill's on second reading. I believe that's where we are. Oh, Senator Christensen.
The floor.
You may.
I just, while she's not listening, I'd ask the Senate to join me in a show of respect and awe for my wife that's been married to me for 37 years today. And Mr. President, I will gladly convey to her that recognition for her hero status.
Well, Senator Christensen, you joined that long list of many of us in this body that married way above our significant other. She's a sweetheart, and I'm not sure why she puts up with you, but she does. So good for you. 37 years. Senator Wasserberger, you know, I've got to figure out when you're standing up just to want to stand up or when you really want to be recognized. Okay, are we on? Standing committee reports. They're there somewhere?
Yeah.
There we go.
January 13, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 9, to whom was referred Senate File 6, Radioactive Waste Storage Facilities Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Excused, Senator Coe. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. January 13, 2017, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 9, to whom was referred Senate Joint Resolution 2, Federal Land, Wind, and Solar Energy Revenue, State Share, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern, Senator Coe excused. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. January 16, 2017, Mr. Presidential Committee Number 10, to whom was referred Senate File 67, CHIP Program Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. January 16, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 10, to whom was referred Senate File 69, Small Employer Health Reinsurance Program Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Okay. Many of you may have noticed, members of the Senate, that our esteemed colleague from the northwestern part of the state, Park County, Senator Coe, wasn't with us Friday, and we lost a real friend to Wyoming. And Senator Coe, I didn't speak to you about it earlier, but I think it's you lost a brother-in-law, just an incredible guy. Maybe you could say a few words about Jim. It'd be appropriate. He was a great member of the state of Wyoming. Would you mind doing that, Senator Coe?
Well, thank you, Mr. President. My brother-in-law, Jim Hayes, Casper boy, served two years in Vietnam. Deployed over there, strong military guy, had a tremendous background in journalism, was a broadcaster, did a lot of radio stuff, and suffered a lot the last 10 to 12 years. Your sympathies are noted. We had a wonderful service up in Cody. We'll say there's quite a bit of snow up in that place, and it was hard to get around and do things, but it went very well, and I'm very proud of him. I also served with him for 12 years on the Cody Fire Department. I was on for 23, and he was active in our community. And so thank you very much for your thoughts. And my sister and my family are doing fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Coe. Okay, bill's on second reading. Senate File 9, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 9, certification of cases to State Board of Equalization.
Senate File 9, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Senate File 43, second reading of the Senate File.
Senate File 43, Alcoholic Beverages Revisions.
Senate File 43, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate file be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 59, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 59, Government Ethics, Clerks of the District Courts.
Senate File 59, having read two separate times, the question is, shall the Senate file be read a third time? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
It's first, Mr. President, I do have a consent list.
Mr. President, I move that third reading consent list, which is as follows. Senate File 5, Banking Revisions. Senate File 7, Bank Service Corporations. Senate File 13, Manufactured Alcoholic Beverages. Senate File 26, Game and Fish Licenses, Confidentiality. Senate File 27, State Archives Amendments. Senate File 39, Military Department Composition. Senate File 40, Military Department Record Keeping. And Senate File 53, Veterans Hiring Preference.
Point of order, Mr. President. We do have an amendment on Senate File 53.
Yes, I am aware of that, Senator Cole. Senate File 53 will be removed from the consent list. Would anyone like any of the other Senate files removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 5, Banking Revision. Senate File 7, Bank Service Corporations. Senate File 13, Manufactured Alcoholic Beverages. Senate File 26, Game and Fish Licenses, Confidentiality. Senate File 27, State Archives Amendments. Senate File 39, Military Department Composition. And Senate File 40, Military Department Record Keeping. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
On the consent list, Agar.
Aye.
Anderson.
Right.
Anselmi Dalton.
Aye.
Baldwin.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Boner.
Aye.
Bouchard.
Aye.
Burns excused. Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Ellis.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Hastert. Hicks.
Aye.
Kinski.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nethercott.
Aye.
Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Fladern.
Aye.
Wasserberger.
Aye.
President B. Bout.
Aye.
On the consent list, 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate File 5, are there any changes? Meyer, aye to no. Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 5. 27 aye, 2 no, 1 excused. Senate File 7, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 7, 29 aye, 1 excused. Senate File 13, are there any changes? Case conflict? Driscoll conflict? Closing vote? Closing vote closed. Senate File 13, 27 aye, one excused, two conflict. Senate File 26, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 26, 29-I, one excused. Senate File 27, are there any changes? Hicks, aye to no.
Scott, no.
Scott, aye to no. Closing vote.
Perkins, aye to no.
Perkins, aye to no. Closing vote.
President, aye to no.
President Bebout, aye to no.
Dockstetter,
aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 27, 24-I, 5-No, 1-Excused. Senate File 39, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 39, 29-I, 1-Excused. Senate File 40, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 40, 29-I, 1-Excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 5, Banking Revisions, Senate File 7, Bank Service Corporation, Senate File 13, Manufactured Alcoholic Beverages, Senate File 26, Game and Fish Licenses Confidentiality, Senate File 27, State Archives Amendments, Senate File 39, Military Department Composition, and Senate File 40, Military Department Recording have passed the Senate. We're now on Senate File 53. I believe we have an amendment. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would request that Senate File 53 be laid back one day. We've got there's a couple of amendments going on the same thing. Working with the other sponsor to get those identified. I'd like to lay that back one day and bring that tomorrow on third reading if we could.
Without objection, that Senate File will be laid back until business tomorrow. Any more standing committee reports or messages from the House? Mr. Majority Floater, that puts us at the business of consideration of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floater.
I'm the president, Mr. Majority Floater.
No, that's
Majority
me. I'm sorry. You know, I got to find my right.
But you can call me whatever you want as long as it's proper.
Okay. Hey. You know, proper is a pregnant term, Mr. President. There's lots of terms that go in there. So anyway, let me start over. Now reset. Press the reset button here. So, Mr. Chairman, I move that the Senate resolve itself a committee of the whole, Mr. President. Thank you.
You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion has carried. Senator Kinski on a bright Monday morning.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 10. The reading clerk will please read the bill. Oh, I'll give it to you first.
Senate File 10, County Boards of Equalization, an act relating to County Boards of Equalization, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, was referred to Committee Number 3, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Ellis, Kinski, Peterson, and Wasserberger. Senator Peterson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Peterson?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that when the committee of the whole rises to report that do so, if they do pass on Senate File 10, County Boards of Equalization, and for further discussion and explanation of this Senate file, I'd refer to Senator Wassenberger.
Senator Wassenberger, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 10 comes to this floor essentially as a result of an interim study on three other bills, and then this one was added as a fourth. It primarily deals with local assessors and county boards of equalization, but because much of what they do comes to us or comes to the State Board of Equalization primarily through Senate File 10. Senate File 10 is essentially removes a lot of antiquated practice from the assessment process, most specifically relating to the County Board of Equalization's role. The bill's repealers, WS 39-13-102A, B, C, I, and two little I, are the guts of the bill. In A, we eliminate the county board's authority to divide the county into an assessment district. This has been done by assessors for a long time. In B, we repeal their responsibility to provide the assessment rolls to the assessor. Again, the assessors now do this. In C and little I, we repeal their authority to add to the assessment rolls and value any property not included in initial rolls. And in 2 little I, we eliminate their authority to equalize assessment and valuation of property. Again, no longer done, and they don't have the expertise to perform the equalization. So after all the repealers, a lot of the rest of the bill plugs in changes. 183102C, little c, assigns the authority to hire deputies to the assessor. In Wyoming Statute 3913102, 3 little I, conforms County of Equalization's authority to the repealers and cleans up how they review abstracts. This is also where the Standing Committee Amendment was added on page 3, line 7. After recommendations, they deleted the remainder of the sentence. This, again, was to conform to the current practice. And then Wyoming Statute 3919103B.
Senator Wassenberger?
Yes.
Can we read in the amendment?
You sure can, Mr. Chairman.
Senate File 10, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 7.
You need to move the amendment, please, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 10 and would ask for your favorable support.
Question
on the amendment?
Question hasn't been called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carries. Back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are back on the bill. Back to Wyoming Statute 3919103, little b, little v, and 3913107 conform to current practice allowing assessor to collect information and value property. And finally, the effective July 1st, 2017, which is the usual for all tax bills. And, Mr. Chairman, I stand for questions, and since I know very little about the Revenue Committee, I will defer them all to the chairman.
Discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a question in the repealer section. As I recall, there was something said about you were removing their authority to equalize assessments. And if I understood that, if I didn't understand that right, please correct me. If I did understand it right, explain what's exactly going on here, because it seems to me that'd be part of their duties.
Senator Wassenberger.
Mr. Chairman, since my chairman did not stand up, I will have to get back to the good senator from Natrona on that question.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, while they're contemplating that, I've got another question. Maybe I remember wrong, because it's been a few years since I was a county commissioner and served on a board of equalization. When, on page 2, lines 18 to 20, ultimately what I understood the purpose of the board of equalization, and I think this involves what we're talking about in these things, is somebody's come up and somebody's appealed their assessment on their taxes, so they come to the county board to appeal the assessment. And so when you go to that, those lines there, we're talking about approve a corrected assessment. And so I don't know. My understanding is that the either party could appeal the decision of the county clerk to the board. So is it true that they're correcting the assessment, or are they approving a corrected assessment, or are they approving their own corrected assessment? I'm a little bit fuzzy on exactly what we're doing here on those particular lines. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Can somebody correct Senator Perkins' assessment of the correction? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if I can correct it or even equalize it. Mr. Chairman, in regards to the first area question, we're under a statewide process towards equalization. As you recall, we use the camera system now, and we educate our assessors. They all have to take a training in using this camera system, which is designed to bring property and equalization statewide. So I think that's really why the change from the being the county equalization part. It's actually all done as a state together. In regards to the repealers, we're looking those up now. We may have to get back to you on the questions for tomorrow, but this truly deals with things that the assessors don't do anymore. And we do definitely equalize taxes, but it's done from Cheyenne outwards. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Perkins.
See, and I understand that, and that's exactly right. Just, Mr. Chairman, for the at least my recollection of how this works is your CAMA system comes out and it provides a statewide assessment, which is the basis of our state of the constitutional requirement we have equalized that our taxes be equalized statewide. But the local assessors execute a significant amount of individual discretion in adjusting those up or down. They adjust them up or down based upon, because the CAMA system goes out, and my recollection is about replacement value. They've got a number of They've got the ability to, and part of that system is it takes advantage of a number of a nationalized index of building costs and construction costs, and so it really is talking about replacement values, and then it puts in certain amounts of depreciation that are based on the age of the structure. But the local assessors then come back and they make those adjustments because not all location is created equal. Homes in a flourishing and vibrant Campbell County in 1 year may not be equal to the same amount that they were, and that value will change significantly, as we found out probably in the last 2 years in Campbell County. So you have that. You have condition of the property. You have neighborhood. They have all kinds of things that local assessors exercise discretion to take that and adjust those assessments equally. And, in fact, if they don't, when I was a county commissioner, we got put under a consent decree, because there wasn't really a way to object to it, where the State Board of Equalization came in and said that our county assessor had to raise all unsold residential real property by 10% over the course of 1 year, because our assessor was not using and exercising that discretion appropriately, and wasn't matching it to what was going on with the housing sales in our area. So while it is statewide, those Board of Equalizations still provide and still do provide grant tax relief to taxpayers who show up and say that my assessment's too high, and here's the reasons why. And in fact, the last few years we've changed that to allow, it didn't necessarily require appraisals. You could come back in with a broker price opinion or other evidence of value to contest the value that which you've been assessed. You can bring in other things, and we've actually untied the hands of the local boards of equalization, the county commissioners, to adjust those taxes downward. So again, when you come back to this thing, I guess my concern is that we're talking about approving a corrected assessment by the county commissioners, when in fact what the county commissioners are do is they're saying, no commissioner or no assessor, you're wrong, the value is this. And so I look at that, and I look at that, and then what they've crossed out in paragraph, I guess it doesn't make that much difference. The guts are in that Romanet 3. Again, I come back. I don't know if they're approving a corrected assessment, but they're actually overruling the assessment of the appraiser and allowing the appraiser, if the appraiser, and the way that those, a lot of times the appraiser would concede that the valuation might be correct and it should be lowered, and that happens. But it also happens the assessor doesn't, and then those things are appealed on up to the Board of Equalization, and if they don't get satisfaction there, they have judicial review as well. So we may be picking at nits here a little bit, but I'm just concerned that this would imply that the county commissioners no longer have the ability to decrease or to readjust that assessment, which could be an adjustment higher or lower.
Further discussion. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On response to that first question by the good senator from Natoma County, what a weekend does, I had forgotten the discussion, but we asked the same question in our committee, and it was practices that the commissioners or the assessor do not practice and haven't practiced for some time. Section 39-13-102, little a, each Board of County Commissioners during its first meeting in January may annually divide the county into assessment districts. If the county is so divided, the county assessor shall appoint one deputy assessor for each district to serve at the pleasure of the county assessor. I don't know of a county doing that. And so that's it. A lot of this, the repealers were just practices, definitions, procedure that isn't being practiced right now by our counties or the assessors. So that's why the cleanup, that's why the repeater.
Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in the repealer on 39-13-102C, where 1 and 2 are repealed, the lead-in is the County Board of Equalization shall. And one, just add to the assessment roll any taxable property within the county not included on the assessment roll. I suppose if the assessment roll is correct and the county commissioners are unlikely to know of any, but it would seem reasonable that if they did know of one that wasn't assessed, and I've seen them not assessed, we had a piece of our property that was not assessed for a while. Actually, the house I lived in was not assessed for quite a while. And I discovered it, fussed about it. So that does happen. And then two is equalize the assessment and valuation of taxable property which is assessed and valued by the county assessor. And that would seem to be, to me, to be a fairly important power. And maybe the argument is that in number 3, which is not repealed, it says correct any assessment or valuation contained in and complete the assessment roll. Maybe that covers the other two, but I'm still a little nervous about repealing 1 and 2 in those sections, as to whether we're taking away any real authority that the county commissioners as the Board of Equalization have.
Further discussion. Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I think the tall senator hit the nail on the head when he talked about the piece that we are leaving in, which is the correct any assessment or valuation contained in and complete the assessment roll. I think the question is the good tall senator and both our senators, good senators from Natrona County, very good senators from Natrona County, Mr. Chairman, go to the issue of whether
What is the function of the local board of equalization? What does equalization mean when that whole thing is done by the camera system and it's a statewide effort? I think that doesn't mean they can't make corrections and they can't move property up and down, but that's not really the gist of the equalization piece. And so all of this language and the changes in the bill primarily go to that equalization piece, which is how we're going towards the statewide requirement as required by our Constitution, Mr. Chairman. So, but what I'd like to do, Mr. Chairman, the head of the State Board of Equalization is a former colleague of ours. I might ask her to come over and to visit a little bit about this before we get to second reading. How would that be?
Further discussion. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 10, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The Senate File 10 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 2. The reading clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 2, Legislative Appropriations, an act relating to appropriations for the legislature, sponsored by the Management Council, was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, Hastert, and Landon. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Dockstader?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, do so with a favorable passage of Senate File 2 for an explanation of the bill. Good Senator from the Sweetwater country of Wyoming, Senator Hastert.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, there is an amendment. I ask that be read in now.
There is an amendment. Reading clerk, please read the amendment.
Senate File 2, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 9.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 2. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask that we it's a simple cleanup amendment, strictly. If you look on at page 1, line 9, when the bill was drafted and presented to us in Management Council, we amended it in. There were some changes made, and it was just an oversight on the numbering. And that's all. It's just simply clean up, and I move for approval of the amendment.
You ready for the question?
Yes.
All those in favor of Senator Hastert's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 10, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
Senate File 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Point of order.
I'll restate the motion, please. All those in favor of Senator Hastert's motion to amend Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carries. Senator Hastert. Mr. President. Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, I think the motion is to accept it, not to amend it.
To adopt.
Let's try that again. All those in favor of Senator Hastert's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment 1 to Senate File 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carries. Senator Hastert.
Third's the charm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And back on the bill now, members of the Senate, I bring Senate File 2. It was first brought to Management Council through the interim, and this bill is the typical LSO appropriations bill relating to the appropriations for the legislature. Mr. Chairman, this as I go through this, I want to note that this bill represents a 12% reduction for the legislature, and combined with the 2% that we previously assessed ourselves, we're looking at a total of a 14% reduction. The thought was lead by example. Mr. Chairman, on page 2 of the bill, it outlines the salaries for staff, the permanent staff and temporary, the legislators for the session and the interim session staff and employer-paid benefits. Mr. Chairman, we had our fiscal folks come in, and these reflect more of actual numbers instead of, you know, projections or you know, just, you know, placeholder amounts. So we reduced the amounts to actual, for pretty much actual expenses. We did cut ourselves for in-state travel and then the mileage and per diem. The in-state travel for the session is strictly the legislators. The mileage and per diem that you see on page line 17 includes the staff. And then out-of-state travel for the legislators, travel expenses, that is pretty much the actual amounts that we've been utilizing. And that had cut out the staff travel, but then we did provide a $33,000 contingency for the staff that wasn't needed in this bill. Then you see on page 3, the top of page 3, we have the annual dues for NCSL and CSG and the Energy Council. You can see reductions in all of those. And then the other annual dues, you'll see for the $10,600 are bar fees for staff dues and other miscellaneous Wyoming brand costs and things like that. And registration fees, telecommunications, A&I, the IDT is enterprise technology, and then general administration support, bottom of page 3. And then, Mr. Chairman, statute and session laws digest, we cut that considerably from 380 down to 55 for a total of 15,996. You can see that's down from the 18,271. And then adopting footnotes from Section 1 on the legislative laptops being replaced. You can see the language there. New legislator training, compensation, you know, drop that amount. And then the special contingency. The special contingency, that's at a dollar amount that was set for, and that's to use at Management Council discretion, Mr. Chairman. That's to, for example, a couple of examples are to approve new training programs for LSO staff. And then if we create any new subcommittees, that's where the monies would come from, Mr. Chairman. Economic development authorization travel in Section 10, we dropped that down to 46,000, and then on the back, for the Treasurer's Investment Conference, there wasn't one in 2016. There is anticipated one for 2017. So we dropped that down considerably on the back of page 6, and then of course we need this effective immediately to act on it. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, that's Senate File 2, as presented from the Management Council, definitely reflecting a total of, you know, 12% in the bill, but a 14% reduction overall. And I'll stand for questions.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members of the Senate, too, I think it's important when you look at page 2, line 3 about the staff, you know, where those reductions came from, and any of the members of the Management Council jump in. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was, but it seems to me we had three positions that were out there, and we had two that we did not fill. One was one, two were in staff and the management audit. One was an attorney, and we were actively recruiting all three positions. We backed off the two from recruiting, and the one analyst, we were in a position to lay it off, but that particular person found another job.
and moved on, so we did not fill those three positions, but yet we did not lay anybody off. And I just want the body to know that, and if I'm incorrect in that, please someone jump up or we can notify the members on second reading.
Thank you. Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. On page 3, line 6, I noticed that you have cut the various other dues to other organizations that the legislature responds or is membership with, but not on line 6. We did not cut that. Is there a reason for that question?
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, there is. And, of course, many of you are very aware of the Energy Council, and it's a group of 11 producing states in our country, the provinces of Alberta and Saskatchewan. And we have a policy and a policy statement that we do. We have used to have 4 meetings a year. Now we have 3 meetings a year to discuss very important issues relating to all sources of energy. That's renewables, coal, oil, gas, nuclear, hydro, all of the above. And, Mr. Chairman, what happens with the other two, the NCSL and CSG, is that there's no rule in place that says you shall pay so much to participate or you're not allowed to do that. And, of course, so we adjusted those down based on the other cuts that we made. However, the Energy Council is sort of an all-in or not, and the amount of money relative to the good that comes from that for our state versus the others, we thought it was really important in Management Council to leave that where it was. There was also a request of the Management Council, members of the Senate, that I, by the way, members of the Senate, I am the chairman, the acting chairman of the Energy Council at this particular time, that we go back to the Energy Council, and I went back to the Executive Committee and notified them of the situation that Wyoming was in, and we requested that they make responsible cuts as well, and they've done that. We were able to get to approximately 12% cuts for the Energy Council, so I would urge the body to leave that in there. I think it's really important that we participate at that level. When you look at the bang for our buck, I think it's money well spent. Thank you.
Further discussion. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I think there's three other areas that were not changed also. Energy Council was not the only one. If you look at page 3, line 9, other was not changed. Page 3, line 14, telecommunications was not changed. And page 3, line 16, ITD services were not changed either. Thank you.
Senator Hicks.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a couple questions. If I heard the explanation from my colleague from Sweetwater County, all these cuts represented the current actual expenditures, but I thought I heard him say, with the exception of in-state travel, on page 2, line 15, and the per diem. So did I hear that correctly, that all the other cuts are what the actual expenditures are, but that was an exception? And if it was the exception, why are we reducing that down? I want to make sure that there's adequate funds in there to cover all the travel and the per diem. The second question, Mr. Chairman, was, and just for a little bit of explanation, if we go to page 4 and you go to line 1 on statute, session laws, and digest, we went from $380,000 to $55,000. That was a significant savings. Is that just because that's what our actual expenditures have been for that, and we just over-budgeted in the past? Or is there going to be a reduction in the printing of those documents?
Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, my good colleague from Natrona County behind me here, the others ones that you don't see reduced are, as I stated, some of these are actual expenses, and as the good president mentioned, as to the Energy Council, some of these are, you know, that required amounts that we were able to negotiate and reduce our costs to NCSL and CSG, but like the Energy Council is fixed. You know, when you talk about bar fees and what we do for our staff, those are pretty well fixed costs. As telecommunications, we're going to have those same fixed costs as we go through, and enterprise technology, Mr. Chairman. So That's why you don't see reductions there. Is, you know, we're looking at what we, this is what we pay. This is what it costs. And then to the my good colleague, we have on the session on the statutes and session laws. There's several factors. One is less of us are requesting them. Is a bigger portion of it. And then I believe that, you know, you look at, you know, these are more reflective of actual expenses. So, you know, as from what we're being told to what is being presented to us from staff, that there won't be additional monies needed, that this is what it's going to take to cover that. And I believe on page 3, to line 15, there again, the mileage and per diem for the session, these are reflective of costs that isn't, you know, to be anticipated and what we've paid. So that is reflective of actual numbers and isn't anticipated for any additional funds for any of those.
Senator Case. Oh, excuse me. Senator Case, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have a question sort of in a different line. On page 2, on lines 15 and 17, we have mileage and per diem. And one is for in-session and one's for out-of-session for the interim. But, Mr. Chairman, I know that we pay per diem to folks when they have meetings in their hometowns. And we have the opportunity to decline that if we wish to, but it is something that, you know, if we have a meeting in Lander, I could qualify for per diem to attend the meeting when I sleep in my own bed, and, you know, I can go home for lunch, basically. And, Mr. Chairman, I know that it's similar to my good colleagues that are in Cheyenne for the legislative session. They also receive per diem. Yet they don't have the housing costs and the other things that happen. And I know that this is a long-standing practice of the legislature, but I would like to know, and I'd like to request that we have an accounting of how much is actually spent on folks where they have meetings, say, within 10 miles of their hometowns and or their home, their residence. And I think we should look at that. And, you know, so I would like to request that information. I'm sure that we don't have that right here, but maybe we can get it by second reading.
Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chairman, with regard to the previous answer on page 4, line 1 and 2, the magnitude of that decrease, we aren't planning to skip the printing of the green books or something for a year or anything like that, are we? They will still be available, will they not?
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the reason for the magnitude of that drop, as I recall, and perhaps my other management council members can correct me if I'm wrong, we budgeted for the full amount of the printing costs originally when it was drafted. In the past, and once again this time, a substantial amount of that cost was waived by the printer, and that has happened in the past. So my recollection is we put it in the budget at the total cost, and then it was dropped by the vendor substantially with no significant change in service of any kind, and we'll still get the green books. And that has happened in the past, and it was to some degree expected, but we couldn't put it in the original bill. That's my recollection, and hopefully it's accurate.
Further discussion? Senator Perkins.
Thank you. And just on speaking to my recollection on the in-state travel and on mileage per diem and the for session and interim, that those numbers originally, if every senator attends and every senator claims, then that's how you get the per diem. And so ultimately they kind of went back and looked at that on the actual of who actually attends and kind of look historically and see what that was and to tighten that down. As far as the per diem, you can claim in-town per diem, but my recollection is in-town per diem is like $27 a day. It's not 90, it's like $27 a day. It basically, your per diem rates are broken up into lodging and then meals and incidentals and some things like that. And so the only thing you get covered on an in-town per diem is meals and incidentals. And obviously, as everybody knows on your report, you either claim that or you don't claim that on your report, and so that's up to you. And in the interim, again, as you look, what you find out is not every senator attends every interim meeting. Where it's held, it can have a significant effect on the mileage of who has to drive and where. And so those numbers are somewhat move around a little bit, and so they change. They kind of looked and had looked at those in the past, found that they had overestimated those, and again, coming back and trying to tighten that down to do that. Now, I can tell you, particularly with out-of-state travel, that we kind of split that in half, and it's lower, and it's very possible that there will not be enough money to pay for some of the out-of-state travel in the second half of the biennium. Also, no one's talked about it, but, Mr. Chairman, also, if you go to the one place that the amount did go up, if you go to Section 8, which is on page 5, they actually increased the special contingencies, the special contingency there, recognizing that we were tightening this down very tight lots of other places, and that we would need to be able to move some of that around. And so we have a little bit larger contingency than when the bill was originally passed, recognizing that there will have to be some fungibility with respect to moving that money around. Overall, as was said, the governor cut 8% out of his. A lot of us felt that probably should have been 12. Legislature, again, tried to do that. This represents overall a 12% reduction. That's on top of a 2 or 3% production the year before. So this is really a 12% reduction off of a 97% from the previous bill. So there we go.
Senator Von Flattern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the travel regulations, it says refer to the Management Council policy, but I only have the April 2007 policy, which says hometown meetings. For attending a meeting in his hometown, legislator will be paid a quarter day per diem, regardless of the length of the meeting. So it is in this rule here, but I don't know that, I mean, since it's 2007 rule, I'm not really sure that it's pertinent. But anyway, so we have a guaranteed amount, even though it does say you may waive part of your per diem in the rules.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First part of what I want to discuss was just taken care of. The second part was on that mileage and per diem reduction. I think the good majority floor leader expressed many things that we discussed, and one other thing that I also recalled was that there was a directive from Management Council to ask the committee chairs to take a look at locations and cost of locations. So that was another cost-saving measure and taking a look at where we meet. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one other thing, too, for the members of the Senate. You know, we've done a lot of business via telecom and conference calls. And, of course, what we're able to do is we save a lot of money in travel, a lot of money in per diem. We're able to conduct our business in 2 or 3 hours. And typically what happens is if the conference call is more than 2 hours, you get paid half a day's salary. If it's less than 2 hours, you receive none. And I applaud all of you for making that effort. I think it really saves money. We're able to conduct our business and in the long run, we have less dollars to spend somewhere else. It's a good way to do things.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to say a great job by the Management Council on that 12.5% cut. And I, for one, want to thank the Management Council for not cutting a single penny to the legislative health care and pension benefit.
Didn't cut any.
Further discussion? Hearing none. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Dockstader's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 2, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 2 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 63. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 63, Department of Family Services Statutory Amendments, an act relating to the Department of Family Services, sponsored by the Labor Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 10, which returned the committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move from the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 63 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Clerk, please read the Standing Committee Amendment 1 to Senate File 63.
Senate File 63, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 6.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and to explain both the Senate file and the Standing Committee Amendment, I yield to Senator Boner.
Senator Boner.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What we have in front of us today are some statutory cleanup and some minor tweaks and changes to the way the Department of Family Services does business. So we'll just walk through the bill here. You'll see starting out on page 2, what we're dealing with is Child Protective Services. That's the beginning of the statutes, which we'll be focused on in this particular piece of legislation. You'll see that really getting the substance of the bill at the bottom of page 2. And all that we're doing there is broadening the definition of who may apply for records for somebody who's in the process of applying to work at one of these child care facilities, make sure they have no reports of abuse or neglect, either currently filed or under investigation. And so all that we're doing here in that particular page is broadening the definition. You can see that it's the way it is right now is very specific, but this could broaden it. So let's say if you're a coach for a baseball team, that youth organization could also have access to this sort of database for somebody who may have had some issues with abusing or neglecting children. Moving on to page 3. We have an update on line 8 in accordance with agency rules. And basically what this was geared towards is, once again, as we're talking about with providing results of records checks. And if there's any sort of emergency situation, they'd be looking to provide that information to the organization which requested the information by electronic means in addition to U.S. mail. So that just allows the department more flexibility in letting an applicant know that there is an issue, and if it's an emergency situation, you don't have days to wait, they can do that via electronic means. Further down on page 3, you see that addition there just reflects that especially when it comes to, say, hospitals, there's plenty of HR companies that are contracted by the hospital or whatever organization it may be. And so we're just reflecting that. If you have a company that does the hiring for you and you basically contracted that out, that gives the flexibility there to allow that company to basically do their job. And then we flip to page 4, you'll see that just allowing more flexibility for anybody who might be curious as to whether they are on this list of somebody who's under investigation or been found or substantiated reports of abuse or neglect. You give them an opportunity to make a request of that central registry to see where they may lie, what their status is. So those are the updates for our Child Protective Services. From there, we transition into our adult protection cases. See some similar themes throughout. In fact, the department represented to us that a lot of this is basically copying and pasting the statutes for Child Protective Services into our adult protection services for vulnerable populations. So if we move on to page 5, you'll see that we'll see that there's a more substantial change where we're maintaining records of of not just adult protection reports that have been substantiated, but also those which are under investigation. And this was the subject of some significant discussion. I'll just point out right away that the process is not such that if there's just a complaint or a report, you don't automatically go on this under investigation list. The report has to be substantiated. They have to be moving along in the process. So there is some process here when you're officially labeled under investigation instead of just substantiated. And we'll get into more of the details further down the page, but just to make that very clear up front. Moving on, there's a largely superficial changes, just making sure that that once again, making sure we're consistent with that that recommendation that we have a record, a public available record of those substantiated and under investigation. And we get down really to the bottom of page 5, that's where the meat of this change really takes place. Once again, especially when you look towards the bottom of page 5, line 21, as stipulated said, you can only be under investigation for 6 months. So you're not going to be on this sort of in this limbo for an indefinite period of time, at which point, after 6 months, you have to either substantiate the claim or the complaint or expunge it from the registry. So unless there's an open criminal investigation, criminal prosecution, and once again, unsubstantiated claims will not be a part of the registry. Once again, I want to emphasize that it's not as simple as somebody filing a complaint against you, you go under investigation. There is a process which the department the department accomplishes to ensure that it weeds out frivolous allegations. And further down on page 6, once again, it's important to point out that this is often conducted independent of a law enforcement investigation. So we're just making sure that those two types of agencies are staying in their respective lanes, their respective responsibilities. Once again, keep in mind when you go back up the page that if there is an ongoing criminal investigation, that certainly that would play a factor as well. So moving on down the page, you see we have another similar cleanup amendment starting on page 6 and going on to line 4 of page 7. Once again, just broadening that definition as opposed to having very specific types of organizations lined out that we just cast a broader umbrella so we make sure we give every organization which deals with a vulnerable adult population opportunity to have access to these databases. Okay, once again, on the bottom of page 7, we stipulate the procedure for this database, whether it's making sure the applicant knows by certified mail if the record confirms that you're under investigation or they have a substantiated finding of abuse or neglect, just going through all the details, making sure that all the information, the pertinent information, is going to be available to the organization which files or is curious about their prospective employees. And once again, see, going on to page 8, line 4 and 5, once again, we're relying on flexibility, recognizing that oftentimes these organizations will contract out an HR company, so an agent on behalf of the applicant can go ahead and request the same information. And going on to the stricken language in page 8, and once again, just clean up, recognizing that we cover that in the previous page with the process. And once again, also circulate language on page 8, top of the line, or page 9 is basically reinserted on the middle of the page, lines 10 through 13, saying that any individual who's curious about whether they're on this central registry or not can, as an individual, apply and see what their status is. So that's dealing with the updates to our adult population, vulnerable adult populations, and on page 9. We'll transition to welfare benefits, so a different type of service that the Department of Family Services provides. And moving on to page 10, you'll see that these updates are by and large superficial, just reflecting that what used to be known as welfare is now known as personal opportunities with employer responsibilities or power, and food stamps are now known as SNAP, or Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. And when you go to the repealers, you'll see that, that's exactly what the repealers are. They're lining out that old language, the old language used with these programs, and just replacing it with the new. Okay, so moving on to the top of page 11. The added language there just is dealing with the power program, or otherwise known as the welfare program. It acknowledges that with the new power program, it can also be used for education. So there's a slightly broader application. However, that has not been authorized or funded by the legislature. So it's giving the flexibility that if we do want to use welfare for other means that are included with the broadening of the program, that we could do that as authorized. And once again, that's getting into the subsection, little 10 there, dealing specifically with education. Moving on, we struck the language dealing with a pilot program provided by that particular statute. The testimony that we had is that this pilot program was never used. In fact, folks have been there for at least 10 years, had never even heard much of its name. So that's we're just striking that language, since that pilot program never came to fruition, and that's also in the repealer section, striking that program. Moving on to the next paragraph, this deals with using state funds to help with burials of basically for folks who cannot afford a burial. It had been that we were reimbursing up to $1,000, and that was the number. The state was reimbursing $1,000. However, with recent budget cuts, that had become $500. So actually, there's a fair amount of discussion in our committee about the county commissioners, in fact, had some concerns about basically those costs being passed on to them if the funeral home was not willing to make up the difference. And so you'll see that that's the first substantive part of the amendment is whether we're going to strike all of that paragraph starting on page 11, line 15, and going on to page 12, line 12. And basically find a more comprehensive solution other than saying that the state's not on the hook for these funds and putting in a statute and giving no recourse to the funeral homes or the county government. So that's something we'll be considering with the amendment. So you know, that's part of the amendment. That's the first part of the amendment. And also, we transition into low-income home energy assistance, making it clear that when you're determining whether an individual or a household is eligible for this program, that we're talking about household income. And the issue that the department's come across is individuals who might be living together but not officially married or filing taxes together. One spouse could have a very good, high-paying job, but the other spouse maybe would qualify for the low income. We want to make sure that basically, those individuals would not qualify if one spouse had a very high income that otherwise would prevent them from being a part of this program. So that's why you see the addition of household income on the bottom of page 12 to prevent that sort of abuse of the system. So moving on to page 13, getting towards the end of this enthralling Senate file, we'll wanted to insert language basically saying that whenever DFS sees any sort of abuse in the Medicaid program, that they do make sure that the Department of Health is aware of that. And that's the other half of the amendment to this bill, basically moving it down to Title 42-10-105, which is the title of that, is referral of cases for investigation. So the department felt that was just a little bit, it's a mostly a superficial change, but it was a better flow for everything if that language was basically
put on our new subsection in 42-10-105B. This is already happening in the department. Of course, if they see any cases of fraud in Medicaid, they're going to report it. But just make sure that that practice continues. And finally, at the bottom of page 13, line 17, for a case review process right now, if the department suspects somebody of fraud, they have 30 days to respond as it stands right now. And the testimony that we received is that that is a little bit too long for anybody. They could possibly still receive a check under that time frame. And the process that the department has is 30 days, period. So having it, giving the applicant or recipient 30 days to respond it certainly doesn't work within the process DFS has right now. And so we're looking to make that 10 days, give them 10 business days to respond to any questions the department might have as to their eligibility. And so we're looking to tighten that up to make sure that that we can adequately prevent fraud or abuse and that we're not giving out payments just because we haven't heard back from the individual in question. So that's the bill. Once again, the amendment is doing basically two things. It's totally deleting on page 11, line 15, all the way to page 12, line 12, that discussion about the about how we're handling indigent burials and through our programs. So the intent being that we'd come back and the county commissioners and DFS would get together along with the Department of Health and to ensure that we have a more robust discussion about how we're going to make up for those costs. So that would be the intent there, and certainly acknowledging that the current language is adequate. The department is covered because it's not to exceed $1,000. They can certainly pay $500 if that was the right way to go. So that would be the first part of the amendment. And once again, the second part would just be to basically move the language you see on page 13, lines 2 through 7, down to a new section, which would flow much better and make a little bit more sense in our statute. So with that, I'll certainly entertain any questions on the amendment first.
Discussion. Senator Von Flattern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So by deleting those sections out of on the amendment, the C on bottom of page 11, by deleting all of that, are you saying that you've ask DFS to go back and renegotiate with the county, then we'd have to come back next year with a new bill to change that value if it's $500 or $1,000? Or are you just leaving the $1,000 in there and just saying that's good?
Further discussion. Senator Boner.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That would be the intent. By deleting the that section in the bill, the language would stay as you see it, with up to $1,000, emphasis on that for that program. So certainly the Labor and Health Committee is very much aware of the issue, and that would be something that we would look at to include. Potentially, the discussion was raising some fees to cover the costs.
Further discussion. Chairman. Further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment 1 to Senate File 63. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, further on that, the discussion, we laid it back when the county commissioners came in and association came in and objected to the change, and they had discussions with the department. And since the existing language says not to exceed $1,000, the agreement was that we don't need to change it to reflect the fact that the payment is decreased to the budget cut down to 500. But by leaving it at not to exceed $1,000, what the department has done is legal. And then if and when our revenues recover, it will be a simpler matter. We won't have to amend the statute. It'll be just a budget matter to go back up to the $1,000, and that'll be simpler. So it was agreed that they could accommodate what had been done, and we could also accommodate going back if the revenues are available. And there's some other issues, because this only covers a small part of the indigent burials that the county commissioners do get faced with. And they're going to want some either further legislative work or possibly some interim work on that, and they have a notion of where you might get a revenue source, because this is a real problem for the county commission. But this was not the place to solve that problem, so it was easier just to delete this section from the bill, because it will accommodate what has happened in the budget.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Additional discussion? Mr. Vice President.
So I also have on page 8, we have the $10 fee, and I'm just curious how long ago that was set. And then on page 7, I have two questions.
Mr. Vice President, are we on the, I believe we're still on the Standing Committee Amendment, in case I'm mistaken?
Yes, we are.
Further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment number 1? Seeing none, all those in favor of, I hope it was Senator Scott's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 63, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted to Senate File 63. We're back on the Senate file. Senator Von Plater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for correcting me on that, too. So the $10, I'm curious how long ago that was set, because you're asking for a report, and I just feel that it would cost more than $10. And then was on line 14, page 7, was the email considered on that? Because it says by with agency rules and by United States mail, period. So I was wondering if the emails were considered and then the age of the $10 fee.
Senator Boner.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The gentleman from Campbell County's first question, there was no discussion on why it was $10. I was operating on the assumption personally that the department was, if it was an issue, that they would have brought it up. I could certainly ask and get a specific answer for you. As far as the language on page 7, line 14, that's exactly right, the same amendment that we had in the Child Protective Services. And specifically the language in accordance with agency rules would allow emails or other electronic coordination in that emergency situation where you maybe don't have days to get an answer back to the entity in question.
Further discussion? Senator Bebaum.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question I have, or the practicality of the information on page 5, the bottom of the line on the central registry, and as I understand it before, if you're under investigation or substantiated reports, you weren't on the central registry, but now you will be. And then, in fact, within 6 months, you could be removed for that. I want to be sure that, you know, these people that commit these kind of crimes, it's a terrible thing, and I just don't want to have any gap and how people know about them. So could you have a little discussion to ensure that we do know that they're out there and what's going on?
Senator Boner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this was something we certainly talked about in committee over the interim. As it stands right now, it's only the publicly available information is the substantiated reports. And you'll see that language further up on page 5, lines 6 and 7. All that we're doing, we're actually broadening the scope of what is publicly available. If a request is made to include the under investigation information, which the agency would have to have that information anyways, if somebody is under investigation. So we are broadening the information available to any agency which is wanting to know about the folks they are hiring to include that under investigation information.
So. Senator Bebaum.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if we had incidents where people were under investigation but were not reported, and we had some problems with that, that's why we're trying to tighten it up.
Senator Boner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not aware of any specific incidents. What the department represented to us is this is their process for Child Protective Services, so they're just making some consistency between the Child Protective Service aspect of their mission and the adult and the vulnerable adult population as well. So they're really looking for consistency between the two populations that are covered by different areas of statute.
Further discussion? Senator Nethercott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. this particular question addresses the issue that the good senator from Fremont County addressed, which is the ability to properly protect these institutions from people who may have had a substantiating finding of abuse. And so my concern relates to page 3, lines 20 through 21, where an applicant who is receiving this information says that they have to provide proof satisfactory to the state agency that the prospective or current employee. And so the point being there is that the information is being inquired about concerning a prospective or current employee of the entity. However, when we look at how this information can only be used by the entity, it only applies to prospective employees. And so if we turn the page onto page 4, lines 1 and 2, the report can only be used for purposes of screening prospective employees, the point being there that if you have a current employee who is found substantiated to commit abuse against a vulnerable adult or child, you can't use this report for that effect. It's only to screen prospective employees. And so I think this may be an area of concern. This is found on pages 3 and 4, as well as page 8 regarding the children. So I'd like to make that note and see if the committee or the department expressed those same concerns.
Thank you, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I think the senator has spotted a defect in this. This is old language. It was included here only because the department requested the additions to this section with regard to the changes on page 2, which have nothing to do with this issue, with regard to the notification on line 8 on page 3, and with regard to the applicant, so we could pick up any human resource organizations that were acting for the applicant, the employer, that is. The rest of it, it's old language, and we didn't delve into the adequacy of the old language. And frankly, Department of Family Services deals with both Judiciary Committee and Committee 10. This is the area which is normally Judiciary Committee responsibility, so we didn't understand the Central Registry as well as we might. If you think there's a defect here, Ms. Chairman, I would suggest this could be corrected and would urge the senator to talk to the Department of Family Services about this for a prospective second or third, even third reading amendment, because I see the point, but it was not something we got into in the interim.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I will elaborate on one other feature of this bill. You see it on page 13 at the top of the page. We're asking the department to, if they find an individual who's enrolled in Medicaid who isn't eligible, to report it to the health department. And the amendment just moved that. It's just placed slightly differently, slightly better. That was done in interim committee, and I will report the Senate I'm the guilty party on that particular amendment. What happened was that during the course of the campaign, I had a number of individuals talk to me, both from retired state employees who had knowledge of the process and some individuals who for the medical offices they're working for, dealt with the clients that they were getting, the patients they were getting, and they said they were seeing a lot of people who were on Medicaid that clearly didn't seem to be eligible. And our new Medicaid enrollment system does not automatically check. Well, it does automatically check, but it doesn't check the income information that the client provides. They rely on some checks of electronic databases that health department feels are adequate. But frankly, I'm told that in elsewhere they have not always proved to be adequate. And I think we've got a real problem here. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm sure there's a problem here. Frankly, there's enough larceny in the human soul so that people will cheat on this sort of thing. And I don't know whether the level of magnitude is great enough, so we're talking about a lot of money, which potentially you could with a medical care, Mr. Chairman. But this is just a first stab at this problem, saying DFS is dealing with the same people. If they encounter, and they will, reinforce the policy, yeah, you've got to tell the health department about it. But I think we may need to deal further with this subject later in the session, because this isn't going to do more than take one small step toward solving the problem.
Further discussion on Senate File 63. Further discussion. Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 63, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 29. Clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 29, Legislative Employees, an act relating to the legislature, sponsored by the Management Council, was referred to Committee Number 12, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Bebout, Hastert, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I would move Senate File Number 29 and would ask for your favorable support. I will turn it over to Senator Perkins for an explanation of the bill.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 29 brings to you what is really, in my mind, a fairly technical correction with respect to the ability of the House and the Senate to employ certain individuals. Generally, by way of explanation, the staff members that we see that make us look good and make this operation run smooth, their employment is automatically terminated at the end of the respective session. And so what we have here is kind of two amendments, that one for the House and one for the Senate, that provide that for employees of the House and employees of the Senate respectively, that they can authorize them to be employed beyond the adjournment of the session for the limited purpose of completing the record keeping of each session and prepare for each session of the legislature. So it just provides the opportunity under the direction of the President in the Senate and the Speaker in the House that they can move people, they can employ employees not only during session but a little bit at the end to wrap up and get the summaries and the other things done that need to be done after we adjourn. And prior to each session, so obviously there needs to be some preparation and things done so that when we come here, we can hit the ground running. And so that's been the practice in the past. Ever it wasn't specifically authorized by statute, this would provide for that specific authorization. With that, I'd ask we vote aye and move it along.
Question.
All those in favor of Senator Wasserberger's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 29, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That Senate file has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 66. Reading clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 66, Title 25 Payment Obligations, Federal Entities, an act relating to the hospitalization of mentally ill persons, sponsored by the Labor Committee, was referred to Committee Number 10, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amendment. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so the recommendation that Senate File 66 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Clerk, please read the amendment.
Senate File 66, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 5.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and to explain both the Senate file and the Standing Committee Amendment, I yield to Senator Bouchard.
Senator Bouchard.
Thank you, Chairman. Fellow Senators, this is a bill to strike balance between the Health Department and the providers in collection of payment for services provided. As you'll see on page one, liability for costs of detention, involuntary hospitalizations, and proceedings thereof. Therefore, and it's and on the bottom, it talks about hospital or treatment providers. What we're doing on page two is changing the or adding agencies that can be submitted for payment. And the situation here is that the health department is liable. And what we're trying to do is move it out a little bit further here so that way these other agencies can be requested for payment. As we move right down the page, we have qualifiers between line 11 and line 20 of page 2. There's on the bottom of page 2, it talks about if the patient may qualify for benefits, payment has been denied after submitting a written demand for payment to all federal agencies. So that's what this is about, giving relief to the state by allowing other agencies to be requested for payment. And then when we got to the amendment on this, I'm going to move down a little bit further to page 3. This is all the same language that we've seen over here on page 2. And then when we get to the part where it says 6 months, we've actually had all stakeholders involved in that situation if 6 months was too long, because what happens is the agencies will just keep pushing it out, and they won't even acknowledge that they have to make a payment. So if we went to 6 months, that would be too long, and that's where the amendment comes in to move it down to 4 months. So that way that we're not pushing it out so far that, you know, this thing has to be really cleared up, I mean, by 4 months. And I'm sure there's other things we can do in this section that we can, as we try to look for ways to maybe collect those monies. But this is a start. This bill is a start. And like I said, all stakeholders were involved, and this is a good start to move this in a direction that's acceptable for the health department. And I stand for any questions.
Senator Bebout. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 66, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking to that part of the proposed bill on page 3, the way I read this, if they don't respond within 4 months, the payment is deemed denied by that particular agency. So why would we not say that if you don't respond to us, you still owe the money? Instead, let's just reverse it. If they're not doing their job, why should we, in fact, should the patient be responsible for that? I think you should put the shoe on the other foot and say, if you don't respond within 4 months, you are obligated and the responsibility is yours.
Senator Bouchard.
Mr. Chairman, we asked these same questions in committee, and they have policies in place that even if they get the payment, that it's just like a standard payment system where it says this person paid or this is due. So there is a lot of policy that's in place already that's not even in this bill. Does that answer your question?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and further on this, you do need to understand this is our involuntary commitment process, and some of the hospitalization, the treatment goes on in conjunction with that. You've got to get your providers paid. because they will. You have people who should be paid for by the feds. The feds don't come through. Right now they're difficult to bill, so we're getting the providers, the hospitals and whatnot, to actually bill the feds where that's appropriate. But you've got a couple of these federal agencies that are not well known for paying their bills in any kind of fashion. And typically, a lot of the people here, because of their mental illness, are indigent and cannot pay themselves. If they have private insurance, that gets billed and paid now. It's the ones that are VA, IHS, Indian Health Service, those people who are difficult to deal with. It's striking a balance here. We're trying to get what we can out of the feds, but there will probably be a limit to how far we can go. And the compromise was 4 months, as when the feds just don't respond, as opposed to just not billing them at all.
Mr. President.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that, but maybe I'm not reading it correctly, but it says payment shall be deemed denied. So does that mean that if the feds don't respond, it's denied and they're off the hook? And it's the obligation of either the indigent or insurance if they have it. So I still think that the way I read it, why wouldn't you say that if we bill the feds and they don't respond within four months, that they are presumed to have the responsibility? And so I think you're opening it up. That's the way I read it. Maybe I'm misreading it.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, as you look at that, and we're going through, we're in 25-10-112, and we're talking about liability for the costs of, in particular, we're talking about involuntary hospitalization. And then we've got down at the bottom, in the middle of, basically on line 6 on page 2, that the hospital or other treatment provider shall have discharge its obligation to recover costs. And I then presumably can then come back to the county or the Department of Health for reimbursement if it certifies that. And then we go to C, that they might have qualified for those payment benefits, but it's been denied, or if they haven't received, that it's just deemed denied, that's done. So my question is who gets that claim? If they haven't responded, or even if they haven't responded, or the payment's been denied, if the payment was wrongly denied, or you wanted to press the fact that they simply ignored you, who has the right to possess and pursue that claim? Does that stay with that individual, or is there an automatic transfer to the Department of the County so that they could continue to seek that reimbursement on behalf of that patient, because now they basically have a subrogation claim to be in for that indemnity? So what happens with that claim in the event that it's just ignored? Who gets to prosecute that, or is there no way to prosecute that at all right now?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I presume you could add subrogation language to this. We didn't. The problem we are seeking to solve is these feds are difficult to deal with, so the hospitals just aren't bothering. And we're trying to get them to actually submit the claim to the feds, but if the feds drag their feet forever, they still need to get paid. You could come back to the individual if they have resources. But if they don't, we wind up with it. And right now, we're just getting it because these agencies, federal agencies, are difficult to deal with. The hospitals aren't billing them. They just pass the bill on if they can't collect it out of the individual or the individual's private insurance, and they know how to do that. Now, Mr. Chairman, those of you in the body that are attorneys could tell me better than I can what the prospects of the state or the county suing the feds to collect the bill are. I don't know exactly how that works, but you could, I suppose, add subrogation language to this so that we could pursue those claims if we felt it was profitable to do so.
Senator Bouchard.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I want to, hopefully I don't add confusion to this, but the balancing act was the hospital said in 90 days we're done. We're gonna turn this in as non-payment, and then obviously they're gonna seek money from the state. So the striking balance here is trying to move that process out another month, and I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but if we went to 6 months, then we're striking a balance between the agency saying, hey, we can drag this out to 6 months and say no, and then at the same time we put the providers at a risk of non-payment and no recourse. So I don't know if that answers any questions.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, recently the Veterans Administration has been requested to issue cards to the veterans, so if they're so many miles away from a veterans hospital, they can go to a regular hospital. I'm curious if any of that was discussed in committee, and if they are actually paying from that, or if that is part of the problem.
Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, one last thing. When we talk about the indigent, and it's a 72-hour rule, and there's a decision made that they're a threat, so they need to go into this process under Title 25. And so typically what would happen is you'd have law enforcement to transport that particular individual to wherever is available within our state. But sometimes, for whatever reason, they don't transport, so you have an independent third-party business that does it, and they charge incredible amounts of money, and that's left for the indigent. Do you have any discussion about that being out of control and who should pay that?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, with the transport payment, that did not come up in the interim committee. We were not aware that there was a particular problem there. We've had some difficulty getting complete information on this whole Title 25. What did come up strictly is that we were having a problem with providers not even billing some of these potential federal agencies, and this bill was designed to correct that. Frankly, I was in Rules Committee when the committee discussed the bill, so I'd asked one of the other committee members, did that issue come up during the committee meeting here?
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That particular issue didn't come up as we discussed this particular bill. This bill originated from the Select Committee on Title 25, and we all know the financial onslaught that we faced with that involuntary commitments. I think the figure was $25 million in the rear. And so this was just an attempt to go after additional revenue sources, trying to divert the path that has been common practice for our providers and hospitals just to automatically bill Medicaid and Title 25 in the state. We found out that through testimony that some of these agencies, such as the veterans and others that could be tapped, weren't, and the practice was just not being practiced at all going that route. So this bill is, in all efforts, trying to direct the hospitals and other providers providing these services to Title 25 patients. Whether the first 72 hours is on the county or is on the state, I think eventually they'll end up with Medicaid and coming out of Title 25 funds. And so what this does, and the balance between the 6 months and the 4 months, the association, the hospital, in their testimony, brought out the point, as the good senator presenting this bill has mentioned, that 90 days bad debt is all that they want to see. And to extend to 6 months would really put them at a hardship. You know, we're talking about not overly large amounts of numbers here, but they just pointed that out, and so a compromise was taking it from 6 months to four. The flip side of that is we go to 4 months. Will these federal agencies know this and say, well, we're just going to put you off 4 months, and then it'll be deemed not accepted, and you know. So all that was discussed, but the first 72 hours and the transportation, that did not come up.
Further discussion, Senate File 66. Further discussion, Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't get an answer on that Veterans Administration card, if that was discussed in committee.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, it was not discussed in the interim committee. It was just discussed that the Veterans Administration is a problem. Yield to Senator Bouchard or any of the other committee members was discussed at the committee meeting during session.
Further discussion, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That also was not brought up in the select committee or the committees. We heard it as we processed this bill through our labor and health committee, so that did not come up at all.
Further discussion? You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 66, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 66 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Whoops.
There we go. Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Mr. President.
Representative Senator Ellis, you have one third of the floor.
Thank you.
wait.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Thank you. I just wanted to highlight that, you know, there are a lot of kids that aren't in school today, and some of them might be out skiing or they might be home playing video games. But I just want to highlight three of my friends who are spending their Monday listening to our Senate debate, and that is Bison, Ava, and Slade Taylor, who all live here in Cheyenne. And so they're in the gallery if they wouldn't mind just standing up and saying hi. We thank you for being here and listening to us debate today. Thank you, Mr. President.
Future leaders of the great state of Wyoming right there. They look sharp. With that business introduction of Senate files, Senate File 88, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 88, Palliative Care, an act relating to public health and safety, sponsored by Senator Scott.
Senate File 88 will refer to Committee Number 10, Labor, Senate File 89, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 89, Presumptive Disability for Firefighters, sponsored by Senator Landon.
Senate File 89 will be assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor, Senate File 90, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 90, Allocation of Complementary Hunting Licenses, sponsored by Senator Hicks.
Senate File Number 90 will refer to Committee Number 6, Travel, Senate File 91, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 91, Small Water Projects, sponsored by Senator Hicks.
Senate File 91 will be assigned to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. Do we have any reports from standing committees or any messages? We've heard the motion. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that we stand in recess until 2 p.m. Before we move off on that, just to let you know that we'll have more committee to hold this afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the Senate. Those were all the ones that were on general file. We've had a number of bills read in. We'll be going through those, and so watch the board. I'll put those up here in the next few minutes so that anybody who has does not have noon committees, or if noon committees get out, that you'll have some time to review look those bills before we start on them this afternoon.
Announcements. Senator Von Flader.
Mr. President, could I have privilege of the floor for 1 second?
Yes, you may.
This has to do with your parking. They mentioned that there is a couple of either representatives or senators, no doubt it's representatives, have been parking out front of our building, and they want to make sure you all park back here with the by the church. And so please don't park in the front. That parking lot has been getting quite full. And I do have an announcement for a meeting, Steve.
Go ahead with your announcement, Senator Von Flater.
Minerals, your committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet at 1 o'clock. Please record this time, 1 o'clock, Jonah Room S18, to consider the following bills. We have one bill, Senate File 78, Federal Natural Resource Policy Account, 1 o'clock.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in Jonah Room S18. We're going to continue our discussion of Senate File 45, liquor dispensing rooms. We'll move on to Senate File 14, inoperative liquor licenses, and Senate File 44, speech pathology and audiology. We're going to get out of the liquor business finally, Mr. President. Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet upon adjournment in Jonah Room S27 to consider the following bills. Senate File 54, Military Spouse Hiring Preference, Senate File 55, Anti-Discrimination Military Spouses. Mr. President, we're going to have some good testimony there, so if anybody's interested in these, it seems like we have a lot of floor debate on these type of issues, please stop by.
Senator Dockstader.
Mr. President, your committee number 2, Joint Appropriations, will meet upon noon recess. Continue agency hearings, number 80, Department of Corrections.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, your committee, Joint Agriculture, number 5, will be meeting Tuesday, January 17th at 7:30 a.m. In the Jonah Room, and we'll be having a discussion with the United States Forest Service from Region 2 and Region 4. We've got the deputy and the forest supervisors from the region will be here to discuss forestry issues. Open meeting, anybody that would like to attend, we'd welcome you to that committee meeting.
And Senator Hicks, unfortunately, I won't be able to be there, but ask him the tough questions, if you would, please. Further announcements? Senator Peterson.
Thank you. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet tomorrow. That's Tuesday, January 17th, to take up Senate File 23, Fuel Tax Appeals, and Senate File 11, License Revocation Process.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 6, Travel, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in Jonah Room S27 to consider Senate File 60, Antelope Hunts Complementary Licenses, Senate File 24, Film Industry Financial Incentive Program. Thank you.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, just received unofficial polling that they're the best committee. Thank you.
Is that debatable under our rules, Chief Clerk?
Is that fake news?
Okay. Having heard the motion, the majority floor leader to recess until 2 p.m., all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are recessed until 2 p.m.